Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks, which is like, I don't know, a couple of dozens, 100, what, 135 stations? Really? In the U.S. and Canada? And XM Channel 158? Wow. This aired on November 13th, 2010 on Premier. This is episode 717. Enjoy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and home theater and all the stuff, all the wonderful stuff that's changing our lives and causing us to tear our hair out. And this is where we do it. And I invite you to call and let me know if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to talk a little bit. Facebook tomorrow, or I guess Monday, is going to make a big announcement. Some people say they're going to do a Gmail killer, Facebook mail. Do you want a Facebook mail address? How'd you like that? They recently bought the domain fb.com. Can you imagine? I mean, Leo at FB. I like it. Leo at FB.com. Actually, I probably would be my Facebook name, wouldn't I? This would be a good time, if you haven't yet claimed your Facebook name, to run out and get it. You can go to Facebook.com/username and pick a name. Now, obviously, every name has to be unique. So, for instance, I couldn't get Leo Laporte. Somebody's got that. There's another Leo Laporte, I guess, or somebody posing as me. I'm not sure, but it doesn't matter. I think I got the Leo Laporte, which is fine with me. And I presume that I'm just guessing that if Facebook does launch an email program, an external email service on Monday, that will be the name that you'll have. It'll be the Leo Laporte at FB.com. So now would be a good time to, if you haven't snagged a Facebook username, you can only do it once. Maybe you could do it once and you can change it once, something like that. So think little grasshopper before making the change. They got FB.com from the Farm Bureau. You know, we're on one of the stations we're on is in Los Angeles, which is, of course, a known farming community. And the Los Angeles station we're on is KFI. It's actually the mothership. It's where the show started. That stands for Farm Information. It was a farm channel when it first started. That's how old that station is. It was still orange groves, mostly, in the Southern California area. I don't know. FB.com was the Farm Bureau. Now, the Farm Bureau is mighty upset because they apparently sold FB.com to a unknown bidder, and they're mad. They're mad because if they had known it was Facebook, they would have gouged them. But they couldn't gouge them because it was a third party that buys domain names. Well, if you're Yahoo or Google or Facebook or Apple, you know, Steve Jobs doesn't call you up and says, how much do you want for that domain name? Mark Zuckerberg says, hey, this is Mark from Facebook. You know, we thought we'd like the FB domain. How much you want for that? Because you're going to say $1 billion. So he gets some independent company, says, yeah, we got a little company, just a little startup, a small startup company. What is it? Freeboonies.com. I don't know. And they'll give you $52 for the FB.com. So the Farm Bureau is all mad because they got fooled. They couldn't gouge them. How much did they pay for FB.com? I don't know. I mean, they were smart. They got it. They must have gotten it very, very early on because it's a two-letter domain. How many of those are still around? So, but they probably paid $25, $30 a year for that. So it's not like, I want $1 million. For that money. So get ready. I think this is going to happen Monday. FB.com. And this would be a good thing for you to do is to make sure you've claimed your name. Facebook.com/ username. You know the name Paul Chambers? Well, he's an internet celebrity. He missed his plane in London, so he tweeted. He was kind of angry. So he tweeted, well, he shouldn't have done this. He tweeted, I'm going to blow up Northern England's Robin Hood Airport if they don't reopen in time for my flight. I guess it was closed because of weather or whatever. Shouldn't have done that. Police and prosecutors took that pretty seriously. Let's see if I can. I don't know if I can say this. Here's the message he posted it on January 6th. By the way, how many followers does he have? Dozens. Well, he had. So, you know, a few dozen people saw him say, Robin Hood Airport is closed. You've got a week and a bit to get it together. Otherwise, I'm blowing the airport sky high. Okay, that was stupid. It was snow. It was a snow closure. However, an airport duty manager browsing through the internet 5 days later found it, forwarded it to his station manager, and even though the threat was deemed non-credible, it was passed on to the police. 1 week later, Chambers is arrested, questioned. In the case file, it says there's no evidence at this stage there's anything other than a foolish comment posted on Twitter as a joke for only his close friends to see, but he was charged, and he was convicted. On Thursday, British Judge Jacqueline Davies ordered him to pay £2,000, $3,225 in prosecution costs, in addition to a £385 fine. British actor Stephen Fry and several other celebrities have tweeted Chambers. Fry said, whatever they fine you, I'll pay it. Chambers has lost his job, which is even more significant. But here's the interesting thing. Within 2 hours of this court decision being announced, over 5,000 people on Twitter have posted exactly the same tweet. I'm going to blow up the Robin Hood Airport with the tag, I am Spartacus. Remember the movie Spartacus? And they're looking for Spartacus, right? With all the other gladiators. And Kirk Douglas is there and he's Spartacus. And he says, who's Spartacus? He stands for, I'm Spartacus. And then all the other slaves stand for, I am Spartacus. No, I am Spartacus. So this is a little I am Spartacus revolt on Twitter. In fact, it was one of the trending topics worldwide on Twitter. Whoa. How to say it? It was one of the I'm going to macho it up. Trending topics worldwide on Twitter. I am Spartacus. Wonder if it's still, I have to look, see if it's still there. I only follow the, let's go to the United Kingdom trending topics. I only follow the San Francisco, my local stuff. No, it's gone off. It's gone off, I guess. But if you search for I am Spartacus, you'll see a bunch of tweets. I think this is kind of an interesting revolt. I mean, the guy's kind of a prat. I mean, to use a Britishism to post that. Some of the people are actually having some fun with it. Dr. Samuel Johnson, the famous 17th century British journalist, yells, Order! Robin Hood's port is closed. 7 days hence, I shall run you through with a pike staff. I am Spartacus. And then a lot of other people have retweeted the original threat. I guess that kind of really, you know, puts it in its place, right? In fact, people are still doing it. Some of these are minutes ago. So I guess it's still going on. And some are pretty funny. And some of them are pretty profane. So I just, you know, interesting. I don't know. Should he be fined for the tweet? I think they take that stuff pretty seriously, and I think rightly so. He was fined £385, but then also had to pay court costs for the prosecution. That's, I guess, British law. I am Spartacus. I like that part of it. But on the other hand, I'm not sure I'd want to stand up for the guy. I mean, yeah, it's too bad he lost his job, but come on. You don't tweet that stuff in public. That's basically in public. What's the phone number? 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's talk. I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Just got in my hot little hands. Boy, I got this was kind of like Christmas Day when I came into the studio today. Well, not only did Jude and Paula stop by from Orange County to visit us. So, I mean, that was one thing. But then I also got this Sprint sent me. Normally, I don't do review objects. I buy these things. But I was a little nervous about this Samsung Galaxy Tab, the iPad killer. A tablet from Sprint, because I thought, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid. Steve Jobs said, oh, no, it's a 7-inch screen. No, it wants a 7-inch screen. You either want a small screen or a big screen like the iPad, but not the 7-inch screen. But, you know, I kind of like this. Just got it, so I've just started playing with it. But it is a nice, it's a very nicely made, very solid feeling device running Android, running 2.2. I think we're going to see a number of Android tablets to compete with the iPad. It should be very interesting. To see how they do. This is prettier than I thought. It's got a gorgeous screen. I mean, it really very legible. I don't know if that's an OLED screen or what, but it's just very, very pretty. I'm going to put Angry Birds on it. That will be the real test. See how Angry Birds works. So I'll talk a little bit about that as I get some time to play with it. And then also the new Boxy Box came in. This is another one of a number of devices, Apple TV, Roku, the Google TV, which I've already talked to you about a little bit, and I'm a little disappointed with, and now this Boxy Box, which we've been waiting for. The Boxy software was much beloved by kind of hackers and people who like to mess with the watching TV on their computer. The Box, the idea of the Box is you hook it up via HDMI to your big screen TV, and then you can, you know, watch... Well, nothing right now, but someday. This is the problem, is the networks hate these guys. So eventually this will have Netflix, they say, and Hulu Plus, which is good. They have done a deal with Hulu Plus, apparently. Remains to be seen. It has a browser. Remains to be seen whether you'll be able to go to ABC's site or NBC's site and watch on the browser, because they blocked that on Google TV, you know. The networks are not crazy about this, and I think that's kind of odd. I mean, I'm allowed to watch on my computer, right? I can go to abc.com and watch shows on my computer. I can watch Glee for free on Hulu, can I? Sure. But as soon as I put it on a Google TV or a Boxy Box and watch on my big screen TV, it's still getting it over the internet the same exact way. But they say, no, can't do that. It's not for TVs. It's only for computers. So I'm a little confused. And I think, unfortunately, that, and maybe that's the intent, it's certainly going to disturb the customers, the consumers who say, well, wait a minute, you're telling me so what can I do on this? Well, not much. Oh, well, never mind. Why should I spend $100 to $300 on this thing? The Apple TV, the Roku, those are $100. The Boxy Box, $200. And the Google TV, $300. Interesting and yet not quite there. I think maybe my top choice for the holidays, and we'll talk as we get closer to the holidays, is I have a feeling it's going to be get the Xbox 360 with the Microsoft Kinect. It'll do all those things, Netflix and a lot of the, you know, you can buy TV shows, rent TV shows. And then once you've done that, you're kind of set and you don't need these other devices, right? And you get an Xbox 360 and you get the Kinect thing, which is kind of fun. Well, we'll talk more about that, but I got to get some calls here. Lots of nice people calling from all over, including Glenn in Upland, California. Hey, Glenn, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
Very well. How are you, sir?
Spectacular. Fantastic. I have an iPhone, and I love it, but I really, at this point in life, I really need to get on my company website twice a day, 365 days a year, before 9 o'clock in the morning and then again at 12 noon. No matter where I am in the world, and I'm trying to find a smartphone. that can get on my side and allow me to, you know, just conduct business.
Now, why is the iPhone not working for you?
That's a great question. My first thought is I needed some kind of special app or download to make it.
The iPhone was the first smartphone to have a real browser in it. You know, before the BlackBerry or the Windows mobile phone, they had these stripped down mobile browsers that really were inadequate experiences. When you go to your website on the iPhone, it's using Safari. The only thing it's not doing is Flash. Maybe that's part of the problem. What happens?
It's retailer.dishnetwork.com. I use it for business, and when you go on, it's just, you know, just text, a whole bunch of text. It won't allow you to get on the actual website to go ahead and sign in.
Now, that's interesting. So for some reason, now, my suspicion is you're going to have the same problem with all mobile devices. It sounds like the retailer.dishnetwork.com site is not optimizing for mobile and is, in fact, maybe actively doing something bad. There are two things it could be using that would be a problem on the iPhone. One is Flash, as I mentioned. The other would be Java.
Flash and Java, got it.
Yeah. Our chat room says they think, I should go to the website, but they think that the sign-in might be using Flash.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. The site says IE6 only. Okay. Time to slap around the Dish Network people. We've been trying to get people to stop using IE6. The current version of Internet Explorer is 8. IE6 has been long deprecated because it's insecure, it's old-fashioned, it's not very good. It sounds to me like the people who designed the site have not been keeping up with modern times. So what you need to do and all the dealers need to do is go to the Dish Network and say, dudes, we need mobile access to our site.
You might be surprised how little they listen to us.
Yeah. Obviously, they couldn't care less because, I mean, for crying out loud. You're going to have the same exact problem. Now, you can't, if it's a Flash login, you can use Flash. Well, I think they're using ActiveX is what I think they're doing. If they're saying we need IE6, I would guess it's ActiveX, which is a Microsoft-only technology that allows them to run a program. They may do it for authentication purposes, but it means you can only use a Windows PC to log into that site running Internet Explorer 6 or better. I bet you it even says that.
Yeah, I can't get on there with my iPad. I can't get on there with many devices. Typically, just a boring PC laptop is what I need to make it happen, and that's kind of cumbersome if I'm in Vegas or I'm in Germany. I typically don't carry it 365 days a year.
Give me the URL again. I want to log on with a Mac and see what happens.
Sure, retailer.dishnetwork.com.
Yeah, if the iPhone and iPad, I would understand.
Well, this is the weird thing. The weird thing is that I went to a Best Buy and got on an Evo phone, and I was really excited because I could get on and sign in and do work, but I just went there yesterday, and they did something over the last...
And now it doesn't work.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I got a Windows... I got enough devices here. Okay, it's not working on a Macintosh. It's loading something start.swe. I'm gonna guess Windows Phone 7 does work. All right, well, you have one phone that you can use because it's using Internet Explorer. SWE stands for the Society of Women Engineers. No, stands for I don't know what it, chat room. Do you know what SWE is? I'm going to guess it's using ActiveX, which means it requires Windows. But I do hear, and I will try it. Keep listening. I'll answer off the air. But I'm going to try using the Windows Phone 7 phone. I bet you that'll work. And you know what? There's some good reasons for that phone. I'll talk about it in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. And this is actually a hot-button topic of mine. It's something that gets me really irritated. Our last caller is a retailer for the Dish Network, and he can't get on the website on a lot of different platforms. Thank you to the chat room, which did a lot of research for me. One of the members of the chat room works with Siebel, which is a well-known software company. The SWE file it's trying to load is a Siebel file. It's probably using connected to an Oracle database. It is very proprietary. Of course, you understand that Dish would want that. This is the private login for a website that is only for dealers. And so security is going to be very important there. But it doesn't work, and we've tried it in a number of different browsers. It doesn't work with Chrome, doesn't work with Internet Explorer 9, does work with IE8 on Windows, IE7 on Windows, and IE6 on Windows. It even says that. Here's the good news. So, now a couple of things. Remens in our chat room says, hey, wait, it works on the iPhone with Opera Mini. So Glenn has an iPhone, or at least tried an iPhone. Opera Mini is an alternative browser, but whoa, hold on. Hold on there. As you might know, this is an HTTPS site. It's a secure site. And when you use Opera Mini to log on to secure sites, you're no longer secure. The way Opera does it with Opera Mini is it runs an intermediate server at the Opera headquarters in Norway that caches and shrinks pictures and so forth. Opera Mini is actually very clever. It's a faster browser that uses less bandwidth because it compresses everything and recompresses everything. It also acts as a man in the middle for your secure certificate. So Opera Mini is a fine browser to use if you want to save bandwidth, you want faster downloading, but never, ever, ever, and they'll even say this in the agreement, which nobody reads when you download Opera Mini, use this for an HTTPS site, a secure site, because it is no longer secure. Opera can see everything you're doing. It breaks the security. So I would be very nervous about using Opera Mini. DPW95 says that you can use Atomic Browser, another third-party browser, if you set the browser to identify as IE6. Cop Mike says by changing the user agent, on most browsers, you can get it to work. So at least you can get the login page. Now, these guys aren't retailers, so they're probably not getting any farther than the login page. I have a feeling the reason they're requiring Internet Explorer is not for just the login page, but because once you get inside, there's some ActiveX stuff that's going to run and so forth. So, but we can't verify that, Glenn, because we can't, you know, we're not retailers. I can tell you that on the Windows mobile phone, which I actually am quite a fan of, AT&T and T-Mobile currently selling these, but next year it'll be on Verizon and Sprint. All the carriers will have it. Works fine. At least I can get to the login page because it is Internet Explorer, isn't it, on the Windows mobile phone? So the problem is, and Glenn, you're going to have to go to the phone store before you buy it. I'd suggest not just getting to the login page, but logging in and seeing if the functionality is there. It may well be that the functionality doesn't work because you need ActiveX or something, a technology that's not available on a mobile device. So if you trick your browser into saying it's Internet Explorer 6, you can get to this login page. I don't know if the login will work. None of us can tell because we're not retailers. You'll have to try that, Glenn. My suggestion, though, is the most likely device that's going to give you compatibility is going to be a Windows mobile phone. And, you know, these are pretty compelling. These are first generation, you know, just as the iPhone was first generation when it first came out. iPhone didn't have cut and paste, for instance. It's a lot farther along than the iPhone, in my opinion. I think it's a very nice phone. And I think what Microsoft has done that's quite clever, besides completely reinventing the metaphor for smartphones, this is a very usable, easy phone to use, is this is a phone I would recommend, in fact, I have recommended it now, to people who have been using more traditional, what we call feature phones, dumb phones, and are ready to move to a smartphone. This is the kind of phone I think that would be very good for making that jump. It's very intuitive. It's very simple. It's beautiful. It does everything a smartphone will do. but it does it in a way that is not, I think, as intimidating to somebody who's been using a traditional feature phone. So this might be a good choice for somebody who's coming to their first smartphone. And for Glenn, for you, this might also be a good choice because it is a smartphone with a nice, very nice screen. The Samsung Focus has a Super AMOLED screen. It's just gorgeous. That does at least seem to work. You'll have to do the login and make sure with the Dish Network site. Dish is probably wondering, why are all these people logging into? Why did we just acquire 100,000 new retailers? What's going on? What's happening? Susan, Innsbruck, Austria. Hello, Susan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi, Leo. Nice to talk to you.
Wonderful to talk to you. I love Innsbruck.
Oh, well, do you? So you're welcome anytime. Just let me know when you're in the area.
Thank you.
I have a problem. I was not a real problem. I was home last month in October visiting my sister in Long Beach, and she had iTunes on her computer, and I brought over my new iTouch, and I wanted to create an account because I wanted apps and so forth. And so I did this, and
it erased everything on your iPod.
And now, not only that, but now my sister has iTunes only in German.
I'm sorry. That I can fix. No, that part I can fix easily.
Yeah.
My real fear was that you weren't prepared for it to erase everything on your iPod Touch.
It's a new one, so I didn't have much on it.
Oh, good. Okay.
But my sister, she can hear good Deutsch and but that's it. You know, iTunes, we want to do the, and then she phoned me up all sorts of times over here in Innsbruck. And I said,
it's easy to fix. It's easy to fix, Susan. It's
okay,
really, you're going to be surprised at how easy it is to fix. In fact, you might go, oh. So what happened is you logged into your iTunes account, which is in iTunes Germany.
Yeah.
If you scroll down to the bottom of the page in the iTunes account, you'll see the Austrian or German flag. I'm not sure which store you logged into. In the lower right-hand corner of the iTunes store is a flag that shows you what country's store you're in. Click that, and you can change back to the U.S. store. So she's using your account still. In fact, you don't want her to buy anything. She's using your account, so she should either log out of your account, that'd be the easiest thing, or if she wants to continue to use your account, click that little flag, then click the U.S. flag, and she'll be in the U.S. store. By the way, you can do that in Innsbruck if you want to look at the U.S. iTunes store. I do it all the time because I want to see how our podcasts are doing internationally. So if you click the U.S.
Really great over here because we all love you.
You're so kind, Susan. So just launch iTunes, go to the iTunes store and scroll down to the bottom, where all the fine print is. And there'll be an Austrian flag there and she should click that. Now, she's probably still logged onto your account, right?
Well, see, this is the thing. I said, let's go to control panel. We're all over.
No. It hasn't changed your whole computer to German.
No, I mean, they did.
Just iTunes.
iTunes, just all of iTunes is German.
Yeah, that's because iTunes said, "Oh, Susan logged in, so she's German. So we should, we should say a guten Tag and or whatever it is, and put it in German for her." Now, so there's two things she needs to do. One is she needs to change to the U.S. store, so it'll be in English, and the other is log out of your account. Although, when I do that on my system, it does log me out. So then she'll see sign in the upper right-hand corner. She signs in. All will be golden. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Avens. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, 8888, Ask Leo. So I hope we helped Susan there. I think that's all that was going on. If you log in with an iTunes account to another country's iTunes, it's going to be in that country's language. But then log out, log into your account, it'll be back in your language. Alan is in West L.A. I'm not sure what they speak in West L.A. Hey, Alan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thanks to you, Leo. I've got a great DSL provider and a great way to back up my files online, so thank you.
Yay! We love DSL Extreme. That's great. And Carbonite, too, huh?
Worked out awesome. Very well for us. Actually, it sort of involves a question about Carbonite and in general. I want to reinstall my OS. It's one of those things I think you've recommended to do from time to time.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out the quick and dirty way to do that. I do have an external hard drive. I also have Carbonite. So my question is that do I simply take all the user profiles and pack them up on the hard drive and put them back in? Should I just use the Carbonite?
Carbonite says, and Carbonite actually says this is when Windows 7 came out, they said, hey, good news, this is the easiest way. You move the... You basically, are you going to wipe out the old one before you install the new
That's
one? What are you going to do?
Yeah, I was going to wipe it out. I was going
to
do the...
So that makes me a little nervous. But, you know, they said if you were moving to a new computer, you log out of your account on the old computer, log into your account on the new computer, and do a restore, and everything is copied over. It makes me a little nervous, especially since you're going to wipe out the old data. I would make a local copy just so you have an extra. It's always, you know... It's my policy to have three copies, the original, a local copy, and a copy in the cloud, which Carbonite's very good for. So that's the 3-2-1 backup strategy. Three copies of everything, original, local copy, offsite copy.
Sounds good to me. Now, here's my question that I'm a little confused about the way Windows works. When I copy a user profile to the two of the profiles are administrator level, one is the kids one that doesn't have administrator profiles. Do I need to go to each profile and grab that profile and put that on the backup hard drive, or how do you do that properly?
You know what I do? Now, you don't, as long as you don't have any encrypted folders, you're all right, or encrypted drive.
No.
If you have Windows encryption turned on, turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
I just copy the documents and settings folder.
No, that's it.
That folder has everything.
Okay.
It has all the accounts. It has all the data. I have a copy of everything.
That includes
if you it's not a bad idea to export the profiles and import the profiles because any settings that are in the registry and so forth will come along with that.
Okay, and that includes the desktop stuff, the iTunes stuff, all that stuff will be there.
Should be, yeah.
Okay, sounds good to me.
As long as you haven't, and sometimes people use a program, Intuit used to let you do this and it drove me crazy. Some older programs would let you put the data for the program, not in the data directory, in the documents folder where it belongs, but in the programs folder. So you'd set up Quicken and be saving your banking data. It wasn't saving to My Documents. It was saving to program files / Quicken, which is nuts. So make sure that none of your programs, none of your data is being saved to an oddball location, but all modern programs are smart enough to save it inside Documents and Settings. That's where it belongs. Hey, before we go on, I got one more. I got another sponsor you can try. this is the Great Nod 32 antivirus. Have you tried this? Look, if you use Windows, you really ought to be using Nod 32. Nod 32 is lightweight. It's fast. A lot of times people say to me, well, wait a minute, Leo, why should I pay for an antivirus when Microsoft offers a free one? There are other companies that offer free ones. And it's true. You can get a free antivirus. There's lots of things you can get in life that are free. In this case, maybe it's just me, but spending $40 a year to be absolutely sure that I'm not going to get any bad stuff seems worth it. You know, the free antiviruses are often slow or not complete. For instance, Microsoft Security Essentials makes no pretense of protecting you from things like phishing scams. It is only moderately useful for rootkits. These are all things Nod 32 does. Well, if you're an antivirus, if you're a security company, you're going to have to do a better job than Windows because they're giving away the Windows version, right? That's why I use Nod 32. It's worth it to me. And by the way, I could save you some money over the $40 a year. In fact, you could use it free for 30 days if you go to eset.com/Leo or you call 866-935-ESET. Nod 32 is lightweight, doesn't slow your system down, but simply the most effective antivirus out there. Not just viruses, worms, trojans, spyware, adware, phishing scams, rootkits. Go to eset.com/Leo to try it or call 866-935-ESET. And if you go to eset.com/Leo, you'll see a variety of other deals, multi-user packs, things like that, family packs. They really make it very affordable. It's worth it for the peace of mind, trust me. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32. You really do. Guy, Columbia, South Carolina, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Guy.
Yeah, hey, Leo, how are you today?
Wonderful. Welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you. Geez, I've listened to you for a long time. I've always wanted to call. Just never been able to get through till today. But
it's hard. I know. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people competing to get through on these lines. I feel bad. But
well, that's okay. You're that's because you're so good. That, and they're so
well, or something, or slow.
Yeah. Anyways, I finally have worn my wife down. I am going to be getting a new television.
Congratulations.
Yes, it's only taken 3 years.
Oh, yay. That's good news. And you know what? It's good it took 3 years.
Yeah.
Because the TVs today are, you know, 10 times better than the TVs 3 years ago.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm not really a true videophile like you, but I try to pay attention. I read as much as I can, and I can't seem to get two things I don't understand yet.
Okay.
As far as the 120 or the 240 speed for, I guess,
Yeah, it's a matter of taste, to be honest with you. And my taste is not to get that. The reason being, there is only, this is how many frames a second.
Right.
And there's only really 60 frames or 60 fields per second in television. There's just not that more data than that. So when you get 120, what they're doing is interpolating. They're saying we're going to show 120 frames a second, and every other frame will be our best guess as what's. So, you know, let's say that the TV is sending, you know, the signal from the satellite dish or the cable or the DVD is 1, 3, 5 is the odd number of frames. It's going to stick in 2, 4, 6, 8 based on what's in 1 and 3. So it'll say what's in 1, what's in 3. Well, then 2 should be somewhere in between.
Okay.
What the impact is, and you should look at these, is it gives it a kind of a plasticky effect, or it looks like, sometimes they call it the soap opera effect, where it looks, even a film, a movie, which is 24 frames a second, by the way, that's the difference between video and film, is film looks more realistic because it's 24 frames. So the more frames they're adding, the more video-y it looks. Now, that's good for action, for movies with a lot of action and things blowing up, or football. In theory, but I don't see, to me, it's faking it.
Okay.
So I don't like it. But that's a matter of taste. Some people prefer 120 or even 240 to the basic 60 hertz. So you should look at it and see. But I wouldn't spend extra money for it, in my opinion.
Cool. Well, all right. That'll save me some money. Then the second question is, I keep seeing now that the TVs are now coming out Wi-Fi ready, internet ready, or your the Blu-ray player will be internet ready.
I'm a little contrary to this as well. Your Blu-ray player will be internet ready. We'll have an Ethernet jack. Almost, I think all of them do, because that's a requirement so that they can be updated. I believe that, in my opinion, it's not as important to have the TV be internet ready as to get a box that has internet access. And the reason is those boxes are going to be iterated faster. They're going to be updated. You buy the TV, what you see is what you get. And you're going to have that TV 10 years. 10 years from now, who knows what that internet access should be looking like? If you buy a box, you can buy another box, cheap box. You know, they're $100 in a couple of years, and it'll be more effective, more powerful. So I don't think building the internet access into the TV is very important.
All right.
I think you're going to end up having a box, like say, like this Boxy box or a Roku box or an Apple TV that has an HDMI out that you connect to the TV. That, to me, is going to be, in the long run, more flexible, more upgradable.
All right, but so what I could do is for now just
give. I would say there are two things I wouldn't worry about. One is an Ethernet jack on the TV. One is 120 or 240. 120 or 240 is a matter of taste. The Ethernet jack is a matter of debate. I know some people think, oh, yeah, your TV has to have an Ethernet jack. I don't think so. I think you're better off having a box with an Ethernet jack that hooks that then you watch the TV.
Okay. Well, actually,
that's my opinion.
Really big help.
Enjoy your new TV. Are you going to get plasma or LCD? Have you decided?
Probably LCD.
Yeah, I think most people should get LCD. It's brighter. It works better in a lit room. If you're really a videophile, plasma does look better. But you have to be a videophile for that.
I like occasional football game. I like it to look nice. And, of course, all the blow-em-up movies, you know. So
I think it'll look good. I love the new LCDs. Sony, it's very good. Samsung, very good.
Something like that. They have the 55-inch that...
I love that. Is that the 7,000, the 7,500? Those are beautiful.
7,000, yeah.
I think that's an excellent TV. That, by the way, does have Ethernet. Samsung does have applications. It's not bad to have that. Just don't pay extra for it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, show 717 in the continuing series, helping you understand technology. 8888-ASK-LEO is my number. If you want to talk about tech, I'd love to. I've been playing with the Samsung Galaxy S. In fact, I have two. I have a focus group of two in here. Paula and Jude from the Orange County. Paula's got her iPad, and she's running her Kindle app on that. And there's the Samsung Galaxy Tab. I should say Galaxy Tab, which is the tablet version running Android from Samsung. It's smaller. It's more Kindle-sized, I'd say. We put the Kindle app on it because I think it's very readable for books. I mean, they're very clear, very... If you like the iPad, it's certainly as good as the iPad. And maybe a little bit smaller. I think it's pretty nice. I put Angry Birds on it. I mean, that's the important test of any Android tablet. How do Angry Birds run on it? And you know what? They're great! It's just the right size. So I was reading a lot of reviews. People said the Galaxy Tab, it's 7 inches. Steve Jobs says that's the wrong size. It's too big for a phone, too small for a tab. No, I think it's actually I think there'll be a lot of people who will like this size just right, a little smaller, a little more compact. So a number of companies are selling this. Verizon was it Verizon? No, T-Mobile was the first to get it out earlier this week. The one I'm holding in my hands here is a Sprint loaner unit. Sprint sent me a unit because, to be honest, I was skeptical. I thought, I don't want to buy this just yet. This is the first tablet, the first Android tablet to compete with the iPad. Maybe this isn't quite right, but now I'm thinking, I think I want one. Sprint's going to charge, I think T-Mobile charging the same price, $400 for it. You have to activate. You have to buy 2 years of service. They're treating it like a phone. Sprint's data plans are a little more affordable, $29.99 a month for 2 gigabytes, $30 a month for 2 gigabytes. I think that's enough. That's comparable to the Apple plan. Actually, the Apple plan, I think, on the iPad is $25 a month for 2 gigabytes. Am I right? This is going to be in the stores tomorrow, the Sprint stores tomorrow, the Galaxy Tab. 7.5-inch screen. It is Android 2.2. I'm sure it'll be 2.3 fairly soon. Android Gingerbread's coming out soon. I'm impressed. The screen is gorgeous. One negative I'm not thrilled about. It doesn't seem to be using the micro USB that so many people use. It looks like it's got its own, I presume, proprietary 30-pin connector. It looks just like the iPod connector. I would presume it's not the same. Maybe it is. That'd be interesting, isn't it? What if I could use an iPod? I'll have to connect it and see to the iPod. It looks just like the iPod connector. The same, it's exactly the same. Here, let's try it. Let's connect it to the iPod. See what, he's playing Angry Birds. Yeah, fits exactly. Oh, that's the Samsung. All right. Let's take that out and put an Apple connector. Wouldn't it be nice if I could use the Apple 30-pin connector? No, you can't. Doesn't fit. So you do, it has voice actions, it has a camera on the back. I'll have to play with that a little bit. This it's not a phone, although you could put Skype on it. You could make VoIP calls on it. Very intriguing. And by the way, I have to commend Sprint. It doesn't look like they've messed it up too much. It looks like a pretty vanilla 2.2 install, which is what I like. I don't like it when the company's really... play with the, boy, that's gorgeous. Play with the standard Google Android install. Does come with some special Sprint items, including a Sprint hotspot. You can share your device's Sprint hotspot with Wi-Fi enabled devices. That's a pretty good deal, too. That means basically this becomes a Wi-Fi access point. Well, I'll give you more of my reviews, but first impression of this Samsung Galaxy Tab is I'm surprised. I like it much more than I thought I would, much more than, in fact, many of the other pundits did. 8888 ask Leo, that's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Oh, I should mention that we are, the web is techguylabs.com if you want to get links to any of the things I talk about today. There's a great chat room. You can find it there at techguylabs.com. 690 people in there right now. There's also a live video you can watch. TechGuyLabs.com. Let's go to Inglewood, California. Anne is on the line. Hi, Anne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in. What can I do for you?
I have a question. I want to upgrade my video camera for my surveillance system.
Okay.
Have a Lomex right now. When it heats up, it starts to get blurry, and it blacks out. I was thinking about getting something larger, a little bit larger. Do you have a recommendation?
What is the connector that comes off the camera and goes into the security system?
I have a Swan. DVR 41150.
Yeah, I'm not. I'll be honest. I don't know, Anne, if I can make a recommendation because I'm not sure what requirements that system has. It may not work with just an off-the-shelf camera. It may work. May require a camera. I would contact the company that. Unfortunately, sorry, I can't be more help. I would contact the company that manufactures a surveillance system and find out what cameras it works with. If it works with just any old camera, well, that's one thing, but they may have some very specific limitations. Joe's in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Joe, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Howdy, Leo. I have a bunch of, you know, phones around my house that I really like, and, you know, they're connected to an analog telephone adapter, which, you know, is provided by my VoIP company. And
oh, that's interesting. So the VoIP company gives you a device that connects to the Ethernet and then gives you a standard RJ11 jack coming out of that.
That's right. And, yeah, you know, I'm a little bit, you know, technically inclined, so I know the channel between me and the VoIP company is not secure. And what I have a concern with is, you know, I call up my bank, they start asking you your, you know, verification questions, you know, what's
your... Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's secure or not. I mean, who's the VoIP company?
Voice Pulse.
It could be and it might not be. That's kind of dependent on their implementation. They could make it secure. It's just, what's coming out of that? That interface, that voice adapter that your phone's going into and going into your internet is turning it into bits, is turning it into packets. Those could be secure packets. They may not be secure packets. If they're not, then they're going over the internet insecure. But I would imagine in most cases, they would make those secure.
Well, I asked them about it and they said, no, they don't implement.
Really?
You're right. So, you know, I'm just kind of curious, is there anything I can do, you know, collaborate with my banks and whatnot, that I, you know, can make it resistant to replay attacks like that?
Yeah, that's a little scary because it means that anybody who's monitoring your internet, and you know, if it's going over the public internet, that means basically every server along the way has a chance at it. Then a bad guy, all they have to do is get your connection. It's not a secure connection. That's actually very, very scary. I would say that's reason enough to go to a different provider.
Yeah, do you know of any that for sure use secure VoIP?
Skype does.
Yeah.
So you can, if you go to the Skype store, you can get a interface device for Skype. It's basically a small computer. It looks like a router, but it's a small computer, and it's doing the Skype stuff. That I know is secure. I don't know. And by the way, what we don't know and we'll never know is what's going on at Skype itself. They may have a backdoor themselves, but at least it's over the public internet. It's encrypted. Let me ask the chat room. Also, I have some Lorex camera recommendations thanks to the chat room. Coming up, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy show is brought to you by my friends at Squarespace.com. Now, anyone can make a great-looking website. Fast and simple. All you have to do is go to Squarespace.com. Give it a try. I have a lot of friends who use it. I use it myself. Use the code TECHGUY for 10% off the life of your account. It's hosting plus the best software out there. Squarespace.com, offer code TECHGUY. So, thank you to the chat room. Chat room's great. IRC.twit.tv. A lot of wonderful, smart people in there. I call them my brain, my externalized brain. And they pointed me to a site, lorexstore.lorextechnology.com, that has all the different cameras. There are some wired and then some wireless cameras. But again, I really think this is one where you're going to want to talk to the company that installed your security system. And because you have to get something that's compatible with your DVRs. And it looks like they have a variety of different cameras here for $279. You can get indoor, outdoor, night vision, color security camera with audio, four cameras. That's a good price for $279. Wow. So there are definitely some choices, but I'd call the company that installed the security solution. If they're gone, if they're out of business, or you don't want to talk to them anymore, Lorex, L-O-R-E-X, technology.com does sell all the pieces that will work with a Lorex DVR. So thank you. And what was the other, you guys are so good at the chat room. There was another answer you came up with in the chat room right before we went off to the break. I don't remember what it was. It'll come back to me, I'm sure. They don't remember either. Hey, if you're going to be my brain, you got to have a better memory than me. Oh, so we were looking for encrypted voice over internet solutions. That's right. I just don't know if that's something that they advertise, but it's something to keep in mind that as soon as you put your voice calls over the internet, they are not secure anymore if somebody could get a hold of them. Now, that's maybe a long shot. I mean, do you consider your email secure? I don't. We've for a long time recommended people not send social security numbers or credit card numbers through email. When you're using a bank or a book or a bookstore like Amazon.com, those are secure. And, HTTPS, secure HTTP. HTTPS is turned on. And then what you transmit is encrypted, like your credit card number. So that's what you're looking for. Email's not secure, obviously. And I guess we're going to have to assume our VoIP calls are as insecure as email. Unless the provider says specifically they're encrypted. So I would love to, chat room, this is your assignment. Find us an encrypted voice over internet provider. I'd like to know. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, a correction, Joe in, we talked to Joe. That was the VoIP security issue. Let's go to Bill in Owings Mills, Maryland. Hey, Bill, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I've got an iPad, and I've been syncing it with my PC now for a few months. And it's relatively frustrating because it seems to take forever to sync.
It's the backup. It's that first part of the sync, isn't it, where it's backing up the iPad. It does that once a day, but that can take quite some time.
It does. And I've got a 64-gig machine, and it's probably two-thirds filled, so it takes a long time. Now, if I just stop the backup and I just sync one or two things manually, it's no problem. But I've complained to my son over and over again, and he's a real Apple fanatic. So he initiated getting me a MacBook Pro because he thought that that was going to speed up.
No,
the
it didn't speed up things at all. No, because it's not the computer, it's the process.
Well, he's a Mac guy, and he's convinced that this is going to be beneficial to me.
Steve will fix anything. Steve will fix it.
It's not Windows. It's just as slow. So here's the deal. You can, first of all, you can say, don't back up. If you just click out of the backup, when I'm in a hurry, I connect my iPad and it starts to back up. I click the X and it stops that and it finishes the sync. So you don't need it to back up every time. You could turn that off.
Yeah, that's what I've done when I just want to add something or something like that. But
right.
I want to back this up now to my new computer, to the MacBook. I'm concerned that when I do that, I'm going to lose things like photographs and things like that that it doesn't see on the MacBook.
Okay, so when you first connect it to a new iTunes account on your MacBook,
correct,
it will offer to transfer purchased programs, purchased music over. I don't think it will do it with photos, but so what you want to do is you want to sync on the Windows side and get everything off of there first. You can move the photos over. They're just they're just standard photos. So you can put them on a USB key, move them over to the Mac, import them via iPhoto because it uses iPhoto on the Mac for the sync. But you're right. If you don't copy those photos first, you should make sure you sync on the Windows side so that everything that's on that iPad is protected now because it's on the Windows machine.
Right.
When you then hook it up to your Mac, it will only copy purchased music, purchased video and TV shows, and purchased apps. The rest of it, you'll lose. So you will have to copy the other stuff over from the Windows PC.
I see. Because I've got things that I've put on there that I just had that I didn't purchase from iTunes. Just things.
Right. That's fine. But as long as you've been syncing to Windows, you have a copy of it on Windows.
Correct.
So you're just going to have to move it over by hand, copy it to a hard drive or a USB key and put it over on the Mac side.
And once I do that, then I'm pretty much locked into backing it up on the Mac all the time.
Well, the way the iPods work, and an iPad is an iPod, is it can only be linked to one iTunes account at a time. I hook my iPad up to a bunch of different machines all the time. In fact, I have photos coming from one machine and everything else coming from another machine. It's okay in that regard. But I think you could just move the iTunes folder. I don't know if everything's in there. I think you.
So you talked earlier about having three copies. Well, if the Mac is a laptop, and I happen to have the Mac and the iPad with me someplace, and something terrible happens, I've lost everything. So if I could.
Yeah, no, you want to back up to the Mac for sure. You want to move everything over to the Mac. Whatever your primary is going to be, it sounds like it's going to be the Mac from now on, right?
I think it would be my primary, but I'd love to have some sort of secondary backup just in case something happened with the both of them, since they could both be traveling with me.
Right. That's an interesting question. What you could do is back up the iTunes folder onto another computer and from the Mac onto the Windows computer. Now you'd have three copies. Remember, you always have one copy on the iPad.
Right.
So something would happen to both the iPad and the Mac. But if you want a third copy, not a bad idea, then you will want to back up the Mac data. I'll show you how to do that when we come back. Tech Guy is brought to you by Citrix, makers of the incredible GoToMyPC. good time to try it. Just in time for the holidays. 45 days free gets you right through to 2011. Go to mypc.com/Leo to try it free. Remote access everywhere you go, even over the river, through the woods, grandmother's house, wherever you're going. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. iPad users were all excited because the rumor mill said that 10 o'clock yesterday morning, Pacific time, iOS 4.2 would come out for the iPad, and it didn't. Now, Apple was quick to point out, it's not late. We never said when it would come out. So stop it. All they said is it will be out in November. They did this morning. They pushed out the new version of iTunes 10.1 that you will need for the upgrade. 4.2. Now, we're currently on 4.0 on the iPad of iOS, 4.1 on the iPhone of iOS. Now, so the iPhone's a little bit of ahead of the iPad, and we kind of have an idea of what 4.2 is going to have based on that. Two of the biggest features that will be added to the iPad sometime this month will be multitasking, the ability to run things like Pandora, I've played with it a little bit to get radio applications running in the background. You can listen to iHeartRadio while you're doing something else. That's kind of nice. You're playing Angry Birds and you want to hear this show, you can continue to do that. It also has folders, which frankly, it much needed. If you're like me, I have well over 100 applications on my iPad and iPhone. And I was getting really tired of slinging screens to get to that application on screen 10. Well, now you could organize them into folders. And I've actually cut down the number of folders on my iPhone, or the number of pages on my iPhone from about, I think it was 11 to 3. So there's only three screens on my iPhone, and the folders are there so I can quickly find one I want. And it works just like that on the iPad. The third thing that I think people are going to be very excited about is AirPrint, the ability to finally print easily from the iPad. Now, here's what you need. You'll need that new version of iTunes 10.1. I don't know if it works with Windows. It works with the Apple, with the Macintosh. I presume they'll make it work with Windows. You need 10.1. You need to have a printer shared on that desktop. And then, of course, you need 4.2 on the iPad. And only programs that have a print menu will work, so your programs will have to get updated. But Apple did update or will update their Mail and Safari apps, so you'll be able to print web pages and emails at least to start. And I'm sure more apps will have that air printing built in. In fact, boy, I got a passel of updates to applications yesterday and this morning, as almost, it seems like almost all the applications are making themselves compatible with 4.2. When will it come out? One rumor I saw said the day before Thanksgiving. That's next week. I hope it's sooner than that. The rumor, again, these are all rumors. It's funny because Apple says nothing. And I think a lot of people saw the story, iPad's going to be updated on Friday morning at 10, and just assumed that Apple had announced that. No, they hadn't. They hadn't said a word. Somebody just figured it out. An insider at Apple told them. Well, it's a rumor. Apple doesn't pre-announce this stuff. It just happens. So no one knows. It could happen now. It could be going on. I don't know. It could happen any moment now. It could happen. All Apple has said is we're going to do it in November. The rumor is, and I played with a Gold Master, the final release candidate, and it works. It's fine. But the rumor is they're having some sort of trouble with Wi-Fi. I haven't seen that. I've been using 4.2 on my iPad for a few days, and the Wi-Fi has been fine. So I don't know. Maybe there was a showstopper bug and they've delayed it. Maybe they never intended to release it on Friday. I don't know. But plug your iPad in periodically, get it updated. And at some point, you'll get 4.2, and I think you'll like it a lot. I saw somebody say, it's like getting an all new iPad. Well, I wouldn't say that. But and now I've got, now there's some competition. We've got the Samsung Galaxy Tab, which I think is smaller than the iPad, about half the size of the iPad, but very nice too. I think you're going to see, and the RIM playbook, RIM is, BlackBerry folks are you know, essentially trying to stop you from buying an iPad. They're essentially saying, no, wait, we're going to do one. And they say, sometime next year. I'm not sure I'd hold my breath. If you want an iPad, get an iPad. We don't know. Or go to your T-Mobile or Sprint, and I guess Verizon will have it too. Take a look at this Samsung Galaxy Tab. If you like Android, pretty impressive. It plays Angry Birds. That's all I care about. Mike, Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. I have an old Dell D610 laptop.
Okay.
And I'm trying to find something newer. It has the option to pull out the CD DVD drive and use it as an accessory battery. You can put a second battery in there.
Right. Right. I always thought that was a nice feature.
I love it, and it's the only reason why I keep the stupid laptop. Now, I'm looking for something newer, either brand new or a year or two, that does the same thing.
That's an interesting question. A lot of laptops have removed the CD without giving you the ability to put a battery in. They just took it out.
Right.
I don't know off the top of my head. Chat room, do you know of any modern laptops that have that feature that Dell had? I think Toshiba did it as well, where you could pop out the CD-ROM and in its place put a battery.
Yeah, because I do a lot of cross-country flying, like from L.A. to Chicago and back and forth. And
right.
The extended battery life is great because you can, with an extra battery or two, just have 5 or 6 or 7 hours of useful laptop. But
right.
I'd rather have something that's a bit nicer.
You know, I think the issue, and the chat room's saying this, and I think it's probably true, is that nowadays, A, battery life is better. You can get laptops with 8 hours battery life. B, they're thinner. So they don't want to put the same amount of space in there so that you can do that.
Oh, it's unfortunate.
So I don't know of any, and I don't see anything from the chat room, but I don't know of any that'll do that.
Oh, well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time. I appreciate
somebody
it.
Somebody will call in. Somebody will respond and maybe find one. But I have a feeling this is a factor of, frankly, the new form factors of the laptops. The good news is, I mean, you can get a laptop now with 8 hours battery life or better. I think some are claiming 10 hours, aren't they? The new Acer Timeline series is really amazing battery life. And one of the ways they do that in a smaller case is by eliminating CD or DVD drives, making the batteries not removable. This is something Apple started doing. If you don't have packaging around the battery, you can have more battery. It just stands to reason. Some of that space is taken up by packaging. So making a battery removable, in effect, reduces battery capacity. So the newer Apple laptops are sealed, just as the iPods and iPhones are sealed. I think people interpret that as Apple's way of, I don't know, somehow making more money. I don't think so. I think it's two things. One is they want a better looking design without the lines that would be required for a removable battery. But more importantly, it increases battery life because you don't have to take up all that space for packaging the battery. You just put it in there. And I noticed this Galaxy Tab, no removable battery as far as I can tell. That's how you make things slim and small and still have decent battery life. Ivan Hemmick, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ivan.
Hey, Leo, what's going on?
Not much. What's going on with you?
Well, I got a bit of an issue, and I was kind of hoping you'd help me out here.
Well, let me see what I can do.
I've got a Media Center PC. It's an older model with VGA out, and I'd like to hook that up to my Sony projection screen TV.
Which has what in?
It has a DVI-D component composite. And no HDMI, unfortunately.
So the VGA out is analog.
That's right.
Tell you what, let's take a break. When I come back, I will fill you in on your options. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by DSL Extreme for high-speed internet at an amazingly low price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. So before the break, we were talking about getting video from a VGA adapter into a high def display. Now, understand that your analog video coming out of your computer, that's what VGA is, and your screen wants digital video. It really depends a lot on the screen. Remember in the early days of LCDs when computers were still all VGA, before DVI. DVI is digital video out of your computer. Before digital video out of your computer when you had analog, the LCD displays didn't look all that good. And our recommendation, my recommendation always was, well, if you've got an LCD screen, use DVI. Because then it's all digital all the time. They've upgraded those LCDs, and now you can get a computer screen, an LCD screen, and hook it up to your VGA connector on your computer, and it looks almost every bit as good as digital, all digital would. So it really is possible to make the screens, or the televisions in this case, good enough to handle an analog input. It's going to come down to how good your screen is and how good your conversion is. I have a box. I'm holding a box right here. This is from grandtech.com, just something we have around the studio that takes VGA out of a computer. You hook it up to your computer on one end, and then it converts it to digital. So this is an analog to digital converter box. Those are going to be more expensive. This is about $150. And it has some settings like zoom, fine-tuning, and so forth. Coming out of it, you can get S-video, composite video, and you can also get component video. These are all analog outputs. So this isn't really converting it into anything digital. This is just giving you analog output. So really, this isn't an A to D converter. I take it back. But that probably, I would think, is going to be the best result for you if you're going from VGA to a TV, not to hook it up to your HDMI on the TV, but to use your component. Get a box like this Grandtech that takes VGA and converts it to component. Then let the TV do the hard stuff, the expensive stuff, the converting of the analog signal to a digital signal suitable for the display. You can buy VGA to HDMI adapters, and if you buy a good one, I think you'll be happy, but they should be pricey because you're going to do a conversion. So look for a VGA to component. That's the one that has the green, the blue, and the red connectors on it. You'll also have to get audio out of the computer and go into the audio, and there may be some lip sync issues as well. You'll have fewer if you give it analog video as well. So my recommendation is analog to analog. Let the screen itself do the conversion to digital. It'll also be cheaper. Hey, thanks to the chat room, by the way, we found a page at VoIPnow, VoIPnow.org, that lists all the encrypted voice over internet providers. It turns out there's quite a few, including Vonage. So we had a caller, remember, who had a voice over internet provider that did not encrypt the signal once it left his house. That means anybody on the internet could look at those packets and presumably listen into his calls. So you want a service that doesn't. There are quite a few that will encrypt, including Vonage, which is the biggest, Broad Voice, Lingo, Covad, Cox, Packet 8 does, Skype, I mentioned, does do that. So here are some alternatives. I don't know of any solution to, except for like a scrambler. I don't know if you want to run a scrambler. Whoever you call would have to have the descrambler on their end. But I don't know of any other solution for encrypting your voice calls if your provider doesn't do it. This is VoIPnow.org, VoIPnow.org. I don't know who they are. I have not heard of them. They obviously have advertisers, what they call featured VoIP providers, and they put big ads for those. But they also have a page of encrypted VoIP providers that includes the advertisers, but also a long list of other services. So I'm going to presume they know what they're doing. Hope that answers that question. It is possible to get encrypted voice over the internet phone calling, and you probably do want it if you're going to be doing anything private. Kevin in Spokane, Washington. Hi, Kevin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Good day. A pleasure and a privilege.
Good to talk to you.
I try to be a responsible computer user. I got my firewall up. I got my antivirus going. I got my backups. I got my automatic updates going. I got my Firefox with the everywhere, extension going.
Oh, you're even protecting yourself against fire sheep. Good man.
But does it all matter? Because I heard, and I do a lot of travel, so mobile computing is important to me. But I don't do banking yet, because I'm hearing about these things that will detect keystrokes remotely. Say you're at Starbucks, guy at a table down the hall, or even in a hotel room where you have a login. Guy in the next room can detect your keystrokes with the.
Right.
Electromagnetic book.
You know, let's put it this way. There's nothing that's 100% secure if a bad guy is determined enough. At the NSA, the National Security Agency, at the CIA, at the, you know, the secret, super-duper secret government installations, they do have rooms that they call it Tempest, that are Tempest secure. That no electromagnetic radiation escapes from. You're surrounded by a Faraday cage and scramblers and all sorts of devices to prevent your keystrokes from being monitored. So if you really wanted super secret, you would get a Tempest secured room at that coffee shop. I don't think they have it. But how many bad guys are going around with the expensive, elaborate equipment required to monitor electromagnetic radiations coming from your keyboard? Now, it's true if you're using a wireless keyboard that some of the wireless keyboards did not use a very secure encryption protocol. They were broadcasting, because they're wireless, broadcasting your keystrokes out there. And it was very easy to detect what those keystrokes were and figure them out. There are a number, Logitech makes them and others, of good keyboards, wireless keyboards that do, in fact, have encryption. But I don't think you're bringing, a laptop, right? You're not bringing a wireless keyboard and a desktop computer to the coffee shop. I think you're all right. Bad guy would have to be pretty darn determined to get your keystrokes. And there's other people in the coffee shop. There's a lot of noise going on. I've always wondered how easy that James Bond stuff really is. You know, my friend Steve Gibson, who's a security wizard and a hard drive expert, has always said, no, in the deep within the bowels of the National Security Agency, they've got ways of reading erased hard drives. And I always thought, yeah, come on, Steve, really? Oh, you can see the previous magnetic impulses that were on there underneath the current ones, and you can read what used to be there. I find that hard to believe. Maybe I'm just a skeptic. Web 1357 says those rooms are called SCIFs, Sensitive Compartmented Information Facilities. Wow. You have to go to extreme measures to protect yourself if the bad guy is willing to go to extreme measures to get your data. I don't think that that's the case in most cases, so I wouldn't worry too much. You're doing all the right things. I think you're probably going even a little farther than you need to. If you're on with your bank, by the way, you don't need to do anything about FireSheep or any of these attacks, because the bank is encrypting the data between you and your computer in the bank, and nobody can see what's going on. You're right. Look, if somebody's looking over your shoulder, they can watch you type your keystrokes. Maybe there's a camera that you don't know on the ceiling of the coffee shop where they're recording your keystrokes and playing them back in slow motion. I mean, there's lots of ways a bad guy can figure out what your password is. Some of them very low tech. He's just, looking over your shoulder. What's he typing there? So I don't think you need to. If somebody's got electromagnetic frequency monitoring stuff, you're dead anyway. They must really want something from you. Let's talk about backup. This is something you should be worried about. You should be thinking about. What happens to that data on your hard drive if the hard drive dies? They do, or the laptop gets stolen, or your desktop gets stolen. Maybe you're backing up to an external drive, but yeah, what if it all goes up in smoke? That's why I recommend and use Carbonite Online Backup. It's really easy. You don't have to be a tech guy to start using Carbonite. You just go to carbonite.com, carbonite.com. You give them your email address. You create a password, you use my name, Leo, you get a special offer, you're backing up for the next 2 weeks free just to see how it works. It does use your internet connection, so you got to have broadband. It's secure over Wi-Fi. And if you use my name, Leo, you'll get 2 months free. Backup is so important. If you're not doing it, please go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo, and be safe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Backup done right. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. Use my name, Leo, for 2 weeks free and 2 months free if you decide to buy. Carbonite.com, offer code L-E-O. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Oh, my goodness. Lots to talk about in the tech world. New York City transit union leader is suing Google. Saying,
and you got to tell me who did it.
John Samuelson says in court papers, the blog is an anonymous blog has repeatedly attacked him with false accusations of incompetence and financial improprieties. He's suing Google. It says, I guess it's a blogger, Blogspot, right? So he's suing Google saying, you got to tell me who it is. I think this is, you know, you're going to see this more and more, but... Does this guy have the right? I don't know. Is it defamation of character or is it just free speech? Google fights it. Of course, they always do when these kinds of things happen. They're trying to protect your privacy. And a good thing, too, because apparently the government has said to be poised to create an online privacy watchdog. The U.S. Commerce Department, according to the Wall Street Journal, is going to issue recommendations in the next couple of weeks. For a kind of privacy bureau. FTC currently regulates privacy. But the laws aren't very tough, as you probably know, to protect consumer privacy. So the Commerce Department doesn't recommend specific legislation, but it does say, look, self-regulation is not working. These companies, including Google and Facebook, aren't doing the best job they can. So maybe we need something a little tougher, maybe some tough legislation, maybe a watchdog. I have to say I'm for that. I think we don't have a lot of privacy, do we? And I think we should have it. We should have the right to choose it anyway. Of course, when you post something on Facebook, you got to remember, as much as people would like to think it's private, it maybe isn't. Maybe not as private as you think. Facebook keeps exposing us. The latest law enforcement agencies, when you are applying for a job, are requiring the candidates to sign waivers that allow investigators access to their Facebook, MySpace, YouTube, Twitter, and other personal pages. More than a third of police agencies review applicants' social media activity during background checks. So let's say you had a Facebook page and you posted some incriminating pictures of you and that beer bong. Even though it's private, when you apply for that job, they're going to say, sorry, you don't get the job unless you give us access to your Facebook account. You know what kids are doing now? It's kind of interesting. Dana Boyd reported this. She's a researcher at Harvard who specializes in Ute and how the Ute is using the internet. She says the latest thing kids are doing is deactivating their Facebook account when they apply for a job or apply to a college because deactivation is only temporary. However, if you go through the process and say, I'm going to deactivate, and Facebook says, okay, but you got to, 2 weeks before it's permanent. During that time, it's not searchable. Nobody can look at it. It's as if it doesn't exist. So you got 2 weeks of privacy. Apparently the kids, they're smart. They're doing that. The other thing they're doing is they're going through their wall and they're deleting everything, starting blank, right? Blanking all the stuff on the wall. That's smart. deactivate your account temporarily. They're going to go back, but just during the job search process. Maybe the Queen of England should have done that. Did you see? She's got a Facebook page now. Within minutes of the launch of the Queen's Facebook page this week. And by the way, it's not, you know, it's a fan page. It's not one of those, it's not like, and then we went for a walk and had a sandwich. It's more like, you know, the Queen's going to be going here. She's going to be doing that. However, within minutes, anti-monarchists clicked the like button to join discussions, and there's nothing to stop them from doing that, and then started posting abusive messages about the royal family on the Queen's page. I'm shocked. Or called for abolishing the monarchy, even. It's a difficult... The Globe and Mail in Canada interviewed a guy who specializes in this, Jeff Ansell of Ansell & Associates in Toronto. He's written a book on handling the media. When the headline is you, it's called. And he said, you know, this is the problem with social media. And it's true. If you're going to go out in public there, people are going to be able to comment on you. And I don't know if the right answer, I don't know if you're the Queen of England, if you should have a Facebook page, let's be honest. But I don't know if you do, if the right answer is just deleting all negative comments. He says, Ansel says, the difference with social media is its immediacy. All comments appear immediately and are seldom edited. Social media opens a two-way conversation in real time. When a company or organization tries to shut out social media, it speaks volumes. It dismisses comments and concerns raised by people with opinions and tells them loudly and clearly, it's not going to listen. We're not going to put up with your criticism. He says, for the Queen and her foray into Facebook, well, she might have been better off not even going there, but now that the site's there... You can't just take down the criticism. Now you have to have a conversation. So something to be aware of. You put up that website, the blog, the forum, whatever. If you're allowing people to comment, you can't just delete the comments. You've got to respond to them. You've got to participate. He said, the lesson for the rest of us is it's inevitable that businesses and their leaders have become fair game for often exaggerated criticism by self-proclaimed citizen journalists who can sit in their basement in sweatpants. Why do we keep getting this bloggers in jammies analogy? I'm so sick of it. Who can sit in their basement in sweatpants and literally cover the globe with a posting that can ruin a reputation and make someone's life miserable. Welcome to the new world of being in public. If you live in public... And if you're a public figure, you have to. If you're a business, you have to. You're going to have to accept the criticisms there, and you're going to have to rethink how you deal with it. You have to respond. This is what the Clue Train Manifesto said 10 years ago. It said markets are conversations, that in the new internet era, you've got to be authentic. You've got to talk with your customers. You can't ignore them anymore. And yeah, you're going to get some criticism. Guess what? But I think in the long run, the upside is better than the downside. But it's just hard for people, especially if you're the Queen of England, to take criticism. She probably doesn't get a lot. Maybe she should. Maybe that's not so bad. Maybe that's okay. 8888-ASK-LEO. We're going to take some more of your calls and questions. 1-888-827-5536. Are you in this situation? Are you a business ready to set up a website and you're worried about what is the response going to be? You know what? You don't have a choice because there's Yelp, there's Angie's List, there's Google. There's plenty of places for your customers to put up responses, whether or not you have a website. It's happening anyway. How do you deal with it? 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., you can Skype me. Just use Skype out. Or any VoIP out, usually that'll work because it's a toll-free number in the U.S. and so it shouldn't cost you anything. We've already had a call today from Austria. I think we had one from Canada too. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website is techguylabs.com. All the stuff I talk about, links to all the articles and everything, are up there. So that you know you don't have to write it down as you're listening. Just go to techguylabs.com. This is the Saturday Show, episode 717. And when you're there, you've got also a link to a chat room. Great chat room. We'd love to have you in there. And our live video of the show, too. techguylabs.com. I'll go to commercial, but we'll come back and take more of your calls in just a bit. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking about high tech with you, Cherie, in Oakhurst, California. Hi, Cherie. Leo Laporte here. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I have a kind of a techie dog ate the homework.
Uh-oh.
We recently traveled to Europe, Italy, Austria, Germany, and I bought an iPad, which I adore, prior to that. So we were on this Glacier Express from Zermatt to St. Moritz.
Oh, my goodness. How fun.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh,
one of the gals, and she's just a wonderful photographer, she gave me her memory card, and I put it in my iPad because I have the little adapter, and so that everybody could look at her photos. Well, on her memory card were pictures of her sister's wedding. So when we got back to the United States, I looked through, I saved all the photos of Europe on there, and I deleted the ones of the wedding because I didn't need to have them. She called me in a panic. She has two big dogs. She transfers from her memory card to CDs and all those things. Well, she left the room, her big dog ate memory card and CDs, I mean, crunched it. So,
oh, no.
She watched the poop and...
I don't even want to know. Was she able to recover the...
It was in pieces. So she called me and said, is there any way to recover those from the iPad? And I looked and I didn't see that there was... There is some software that somebody's offering to do that, but I am very, very leery about loading any kinds of software that says it's going to mess with my iPad because I don't want to do that. There's also
chances are it's gone. So you're saying that when she gave you you must have had the little adapter that reads memory cards for your iPad.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So you put it in there. And you loaded it onto the iPad so you could look at them. That's kind of cool. You made a little slideshow out of them.
Yes.
But then you later erased them.
Yes.
And have you put other stuff on your iPad since then?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Chances are very good that there's nothing there.
Okay.
I wouldn't even... I mean, as much as I would love to help this poor woman... you're right. Nothing Apple approved allows you to look at the hard drive.
Yes, that and the fact they don't support Flash are kind of like the downers for me for yeah. that. But I had saved her Switzerland and Austria and Germany photos, a lot of them. So I was able to
good.
Those. And
now, there is one possibility here. Every time you connect your iPad to iTunes, it syncs it up and backs it up.
Yeah, I know.
You might have an old backup that has something in there.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think so.
It's a lot of trouble to go to.
I don't. There was some place that says that they recover things, and they said, you know, even if it's run over by a bulldozer, they can recover.
Yeah, but no. That's not the problem, though, is you've probably overwritten it.
Yeah, but I mean, for her memory card.
Her memory card. Yeah, you can send her to the website pcinspector.de. The problem is she's going to have to, you know, it may be that just the plastic packaging in the memory card is damaged, but the card itself might be okay, the circuit board.
It's in pieces. And
yeah, no, there's nothing, no company's going to be able to recover that.
Well, this one company said that they've done it for things that have been run over by bulldozers,
yeah.
File savers or something like that.
Drive savers. And okay. They have lots of pictures. What's been run over, though, is the laptop. The hard drive is intact. As soon as, and this isn't flash memory. If the flash memory, the circuit card inside the plastic is damaged, I think you're out of luck.
Yeah, well, then she ought to get rid of the dogs, I guess.
Well, I wouldn't do that just because they ate her homework. Next time, put it on a shelf.
I know. Another thing, if you have time, my husband's retiring in 2 weeks, and I want to, we're going to purchase a new big screen TV.
Oh, how fun.
We live in the mountains near Yosemite, so we don't have cable, and I want to get him either DirecTV or Dish TV or whatever, but want to also be able to use my computer to have things on the TV.
How's your internet access? Do you have pretty good high-speed internet out there? Or?
I have, yes, very, very good, yes.
From the phone company?
Yes, I work.
Yeah. Ah, so you have AT&T service out there.
No, it's not AT&T. It's from our local company.
Okay, but pretty fast internet. So yeah, you can hook up. In fact, this is what's going on right now. There's this real battle over what to hook up to the internet to give your TV internet capabilities. My current favorite is probably the Roku. It's only $100.
Okay.
ROKU.com.
Know about that?
And yeah, and it'll give him access to Netflix, Amazon. You can buy music and not music, TV shows and movies on Amazon and watch them on the thing. Netflix is great. Netflix is moving towards streaming everything. There are also ways to, for instance, put your pictures on Smug Mug or Flickr and watch them on the Roku. I have a great slideshow from my Smug Mug on the big screen TV. That's great. Another good choice, if he's interested in gaming at all, or maybe you have kids that are interested in gaming, is an Xbox 360.
Nope.
You're going to want to get, truthfully, what you're really going to want to get is a Blu-ray player for him.
Okay.
And that's because the best quality video is going to be not through the dish or the satellite or through the internet, but it's going to be on Blu-ray discs. And it looks spectacular.
We watch movies on the iPad. In fact, we were just watching them in bed last night. We were watching.
Isn't
we
that
were watching,
cute?
And it's so, you know, it's so sharp and clear. And
do you have a Netflix? You must have a Netflix account.
No, I don't. I just got it.
Okay, yeah. So here's what I would do. Get a good big screen TV, get a good Blu-ray player, get a Netflix account, get Netflix on your iPad. You can watch all the Netflix movies on your iPad.
Okay.
Get an Apple TV, maybe, or a Roku box for the big screen TV that'll let you watch the Netflix on the TV.
Oh, that's great.
And then if there's a movie you really like and you want it to look as good as it can, then Netflix, get them to send you the Blu-ray disc of it, and it'll look fantastic. So, a three-disc Netflix account is probably just right for you.
Thank you so much, and so much for the dog. And
yeah, I'm sorry, Cherie, but tell her about PCinspector.de. That's at least software. If she can get the thing to mount on her computer, the software will often recover those. I would not go to Drive Savers or anybody like that. They're not really for flash memory. If the flash is destroyed, there's nothing much you can do about that. I can only imagine. Obviously, the dog chewed it, which means it probably just the whole thing got broken up. PC Inspector is free, by the way. If it's a good thing to have, if you do put have a digital camera, it will recover a lot of times damaged or deleted files from flash cards, and it's a good thing to have around for free. And by the way, you can if you've been backing up your iPad, go to application support. In the iTunes there's the backups. You could look through those. You might have those. Might have the picture there too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy is brought to you by Stamps.com. Here come the holidays. Here come the lines at the post office. I don't do that anymore. No, no, no. I print postage. Yes, it's legal. It's official U.S. postage. It's Stamps.com. You can use your PC and your printer, and you don't need special ink. You don't need a postage meter. You just need Stamps.com. For a no-risk trial offer, including a $100 bonus offer, and $45 free postage, which for me, that's like my whole Christmas card list. $45 free postage. Go to stamps.com. Click the try it free button and use my name, Leo. Stamps.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. And John is in New Jersey. Hey, John, what can I do for you today? Welcome.
All right. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I had a question about some different iMacs that were available on the website between, let's say, the Intel i3 and i5 processors. I'm not sure what the difference is in between them, and I was considering to upgrade to it because I'm a PC user right now.
Yeah, I love the iMacs. I think they're very nice systems, and Apple's usually pretty straightforward in terms of pricing. They don't, unlike, you know, in the PC world, there's thousands of manufacturers and all different prices, and it's sometimes hard to compare. Apple... what you see is what you get. You know, you pay a little more money, you get a little more power. But I can talk about the i3 versus the i5 versus the i7. This is a choice even Windows users are often compelled to make. Intel made three different versions of this processor. The i3 exists only so that they can have a low price point. I don't generally recommend the i3. Most people want an i5. What it comes down to, by the way, is... a couple of things: the number of processors, the number of threads, the amount of level 2 cache, which makes the biggest difference in speed, and I would say the i5 is probably what you want. Don't look at the gigahertz, you know, the number of instructions per second, because that isn't really anymore a good way to compare. But you can look at any of these iMacs. You know, the basic iMacs all have i3s, and if you click select, you could turn it up to an i5 for a couple of $100. If processing power is important, I would do that.
Okay. No, I was...
I think that's a significant difference. And for a couple of $100, I don't think that's a big deal in terms of performance. Let's see. I'm just going to look. Both the 3.2 gigahertz i3 and this 3.6 gigahertz i5 offer 4 megabytes of L3 cache, integrated memory controller, hyper-threading. Available on the i5, Turbo Boost, a dynamic performance technology that speeds up the core when the other core isn't needed. That's actually kind of cool. If you're only using one processor, it'll throw power to that processor, in effect overclocking it for you. I think this is an overly simplistic statement that Apple's giving you here. There are real benefits to going to the i5. If you need speed, I'd spend a couple $100 more. Also, get at least 4 gigs of RAM. They offer 8 gigs for $200. Apple's traditionally been overpriced on RAM. That's not too awful. If you really want a lot of speed, maybe more RAM would be helpful as well. But you're gonna be, what are you gonna do with this? You're upgrading from a PC. That you do what with?
Nothing really too much. Just maybe some basic audio encoding, maybe some basic video editing, but nothing major.
I think you'd be fine with an i3. I'm not as big a fan of the i3. I think the i5 is a nice jump up for a small amount of money. So I'd go to the i5. You don't need an i7. That just adds hyper-threading to the multi-cores. I think i5 is just about right.
I just wanted to last for a few years, too, because...
Yeah, Intel does that. You know, every time they come out with a chip line, and they do this, it's totally psychology. They give you a low price entry level so that you know people can publish this. Oh, it's only $900. They give you a high priced because there's people out there who will spend any amount of money to say I have the fastest processor. But it also has a psychological impact because you see, oh, I could get the high price, but for just a couple $100 less, I get almost the next one down. Almost always, Intel's designed it so that the one you want is the one just behind the top of the line. In this case, the i5.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, and thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Thank you, John. Take care. Next It lied. Jay from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi, Jay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, I'm a big fan. It's a pleasure to talk to you. My question is, I'm looking at buying a new PC, and I just want to know how many cores do I need? It used to be based on clock speed, and now it's just kind of confusing.
Yeah, you know what happened is you know, for many, many years, it was just faster clock speed. You know, I remember my first Pentium back in 1992 or 3, it was 90 megahertz. And we all gathered around. Bill McCrone of PC Magazine brought it in. He said, look at this. It's amazing. It's a 90 megahertz processor. And I remember using it. And, oh, it's so fast. It feels slippery. It's so fast. Well, goodness gracious, 90 megahertz wouldn't do anything these days. So we got faster and faster. But there got to a point. Intel thought, oh, we'll be able to get to 4 gigahertz. This was about 10 years ago. They said 4 gigahertz we're going to get to. And around about 2004, 2005, they realized, you know what? We can't. We were coming up against limits in terms of heating. There's all sorts of issues that start happening when you get to 4 gigahertz. So they backed off. They said, all right, we can't do 4 gigahertz. We're going to do 3 gigahertz plus chips. But what we're going to do is instead of adding gigahertz, we're going to add chips. First of all, we've got lots of extra transistors. We are reducing the process. So the same size die, that's the stuff you see when you get a chip, it's a plastic thing, that's called a die. The same size die, we can now put 4 processors in that same die that used to hold just one. So that's one thing we could do, is put more processors in there. We've got extra transistors, so we can use those extra transistors to do hyper threading. And so that's what they've done. Instead of increasing the clock speed, they've just given you parallel processing. Now, there's not quite the same, because if a program is just like doing a lot of calculation, and if it's just kind of one thread of calculation, a faster clock speed would be better, would be preferable to parallel. Multiple processors is only good in a situation where you're doing multiple things, or the task you're doing can be divided up into multiple chunks that you can't hand off. It requires multi-processing in the operating system and in the applications. Well, of course, since everything's multi-processor now, all operating systems will do this, and almost all applications will do it, but not all of them will benefit as much. So, you know, I mean, but this is the way it is. We're not going to see 4 gigahertz chips. We're going to see 4, 6, 8 core chips. It does make a difference if you're doing something that you can divide up. And you know, things like video or audio conversions, rendering, Gaussian blurs in Photoshop, those tasks can be divided up across multiple chips. But a lot of what we do really only uses one chip. On the other hand, maybe you're running multiple programs. You have a browser with multiple tabs. Modern browsers, each tab can be a separate process. And you've got your email. And you've got music playing in the background. Well, each of those can use a different core. So, yes, the computer is capable of more. I just bought a late model Mac Pro that has 8 cores, 2 quad-core chips. It's 8 processors. And each of those processors can do 2 things at a time. So it's 16, it's effectively 16 processors. And I thought, this is overkill. And I launched one of those processor monitoring programs. No processor gets full at any given time. I mean, there's just so much power in this thing. It's probably overkill.
So is it better to build my own PC, or should I go with something from Dell?
That's a different question. I do recommend you buy it from Dell, and people are going to yell at me, but here's the problem when you build your own PC. If something goes wrong, you're putting all the components together from different manufacturers, who do you go to? The motherboard manufacturer says, it's not our fault. Go talk to your RAM vendor. Your RAM vendor says, not our fault. Go talk to your... You're the last line of resort. You're the guy who's got to warranty it. Much better to have it all from Dell and let them worry about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number to call. You've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. Don in Santa Monica, California. Hi, Don.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Leo. It looks like good soup that you're eating.
I'm having soup.
Soup.
It's very good. It's Italian wedding soup.
Yeah. My question to you is, when I go on to different websites and I'm reading text, it always has a, you know, a very bright background color. The text is black, of course. And is there a way to change that background color to a softer, like a mellow yellow or something?
They call me mellow yellow. When the first web browsers came out, Mosaic, all the backgrounds are gray. And in fact, that really reminds me of the old days of the internet when I see a website with black text on gray. I think people came to want to have it look more like a newspaper with black text on white. But you can control how a page looks with a little work. You can change the default template for the page. What browser do you use?
Firefox.
Okay. Yeah, Firefox will let you do this. So if you're in Firefox and you go into the preferences, okay. I mean, I bet you there's somebody out there who will offer.
I wonder if there's a tutorial on how to do that.
Yeah.
YouTube.
I bet there is. So Firefox does allow you to change the default template. And then in the settings, you can say, always use this instead of what the website says to use.
Oh, okay.
Actually, there's a really great page. You might check out Readability. Readability. I like this. This is a site that lets you put a bookmark in your browser, a bookmarklet that you have in the browser. And then when you go to a page, it will convert the page to a more readable form. I think this is actually what you want. They have a number of styles, and one of them is novel, which is kind of exactly, I think, what you want, kind of a beige background with black text. You could say how big the text is. You can even have it be really readable and large.
That color there is real
good. Yeah, see that? Yeah. So that's readability. If you Google readability, and then so you get it, you say, this is how I want my readability pages to, how big the margin is going to be. You can even have it convert hyperlinks to footnotes so that they don't bug you. They have different styles, and I think you can even change it. But it sounds like you're looking for the novel version. So once you get it just like that, then you drag this bookmark from readability into your browser bar. Now, let's go to a site. I'll go to my website, my blog, which has a lot of clutter. Like most blogs, there's sidebars and there's all sorts of silly stuff. And maybe you don't like the background text and so forth. Then I click the readability link, and it takes the content of that page and converts it to exactly what you're looking for. Bigger text, beige background, much more readable, isn't that?
Yes, yes, yes.
Isn't that slick? So that is, and then by doing it this way, you only do the pages you say, I want to read this. Most of the pages look completely normal until you get to a page, I want to read this. And then you click the readability bookmark and it converts it.
That's like Kindle. It looks like Kindle now.
Yes, you can make it look like the Kindle. Readability is a very clever idea. So Google, the link is crazy. It's like ARC90, and it's just lab.arc90.com/experiments/readability. But just if you Google readability, you can set up your bookmark, and once you've done it, you never have to go back to this site again.
Oh, okay.
And I think you can even customize this more if you say, I don't want it to be that. I don't want it to be this. I want the, you know. I think you can even customize it more. But that I like readability. I have that on my bookmark bar all the time in case I get to a site that's just so ugly. You know, sometimes remember Wired magazine in the old days, it'd be black text on purple background and you couldn't read it. Yeah. And I want to read what they're saying, but I don't. My eyes are. I got old eyes. I want to be able to read this.
I'm diabetic and the glare now is bothering my eyes. If I'm reading a lot, it bothers my eyes. So it's off.
Right.
Light is better for me.
Well, and I've always said that these websites are designed by 22-year-olds with perfect vision.
Yeah.
Right? So So I've taken this Wired article and I've converted it with readability. Now, isn't that not a big text on a kind of a beige background? Very readable.
Yeah, that's very much better.
Yeah. Google readability, Don.
Thank you very much, Leo. Appreciate it.
My great pleasure. Great to talk to you. Yeah, I've been meaning to tell people about that. I just, once I found that, I thought, boy, this is great. And it'll take any page and convert it into something that is much more legible. And you get to set it the way you want it. I like the novel setting. I think that's you know, very easy. And I make it big text because and by the way, it does add some buttons that for, you know, mailing and reversing it and all that stuff. So they've done a, I think they've done a nice job. You can modify the standard template in Firefox. You can see the readability bookmarks, a bunch of JavaScript. You can modify the standard template in Firefox. The problem with doing that is it modifies everything. And I would say you only really want to do this when you get to a page where you want to read the text. More calls to come in just a little bit. We got Jonathan. He's having problems with his Ubuntu. And Spence in Michigan. He's got his wife's pictures on his phone. He doesn't want them. I'll help you get rid of them. Before we do that, though, I want to tell everybody about Carbonite. Now, wait a minute. You've heard me talk about Carbonite for consumers. But did you know Carbonite also has a version for small business? Backup's even more important for small business. Imagine if you have a small business or any business, what would happen if your data were lost? There were a fire at the office. Could your business go on? I think in many cases, it'd put you out of business. That's why backup is critical. And not just backup to a drive next to the computer. You need to get off-site backup. Now, there are a lot of off-site backup solutions for business. Very expensive. Carbonite Pro is perfect for the small business that wants the efficiency, the security of offsite backup without paying an arm and a leg for it. Go to Carbonite Pro right now. CarbonitePro.com. You can try it free for 30 days. Prices start at $10 a month. I'll give you an example. You've got 10 users, each with 2 gigabytes on their hard drive, $25 a month. That's it. And Carbonite means that the Carbonite Pro has a centralized dashboard so you can know who's backed up. Your users can restore themselves if you set it up that way. It's absolutely secure with AES and triple DES encryption. Actually, it's triple DES and Blowfish encryption, so you're really secure. It is easy. It is effective. Your users won't even have to think about backup. It just does it automatically. It is so, so sweet. CarbonitePro.com. Try it for 30 days. Absolutely free. I think you're going to like it. Carbonite Pro. .com. I gotta find out what Spence is up to. Spence in Howell, Michigan. Hi, Spence. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Spence, are you there? Hello, Spence. Come on over to the phone. Works better when you speak into it.
Button.
That's quite all right. What can I do for you?
Oh, big fan. Been following you since the screensavers and call for help and all that.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Well. What really happened was I bought a nice new iPhone 4, 32 gig, and I'm getting sentimental. So I downloaded all the videos or a lot of the pictures from my wife's computer onto mine.
Yeah.
As I'm going to start organizing everything. Oh, 2 days later, her hard drive crashed.
Ah. Oh.
Yeah. Something to the effect of no operating system found or something along that lines.
All right. Now you haven't necessarily lost the data. It just means it can't boot into Windows. But if you, take that drive and put it into your computer or get it to a pro's computer, and they can probably still get the data off of it. So don't mess with her drive. Don't format it or anything. The data is probably still there.
Right. Yeah, that's what we did. She got an HP. She got the 3-year thing. She sent it off, and they replaced the hard drive and sent the old one back. So I have the hard drive.
Oh, good. Okay.
Is there a way that I can slave it onto
yes.
the top?
Yes. If you go to NewerTech, NewerTech.com, or if you've got a Fry's in your neighborhood or a good electronics store, you can buy these USB adapters for bare hard drives. NewerTech sells one for, I think it's around $30. They call it their universal drive adapter.
Cool.
And what it is it's a connector for a bare drive, the drive you have in your hands right now. You don't need an enclosure for it. You just need to connect the connectors to it. It plugs into the wall so there's power because the drive needs power.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns it into a USB drive.
Okay. Now,
you don't want to leave it that way because it's not an enclosure, but you can mount it now on any computer And I think you'll be able to see the data and recover it. It's $35, USB universal drive adapter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.